This is Father's Day. And it's interesting, I have not been able to find out where Father's Day comes from. We have the idea of Mother's Day, but I have no knowledge of where Father's Day comes from. Nevertheless, it is here, and I think it is proper for us to take time to remind ourselves of the responsibility of fathers. I have in my library several books, but two books I'm thinking about as I begin this morning's message. One book is titled The Dictionary of Religious Thoughts. And in this dictionary are thoughts about almost every subject you can think about. Those who have talked upon it, and those who have said anything on it. And in that book, a book that thick, The Dictionary of Religious Thought, there is not one word about fathers. Then I have another book, 12,000 quotations from religious leaders. 12,000 quotations. And in that book, there's not one word about fathers. And I ask myself the question, why is nothing said about fathers? Is it because there's nothing to be said about fathers? Why do we have, in these two volumes, I have tons of things about Mother's Day, but nothing about Father's Day, or about fathers? And I think there is a very good reason for that. In a lot of cases, I think, we have not given, as fathers, we have not given reasons. Now, every rule has their exceptions. But in general, we as fathers have not given the world things to remember us by. Fathers are usually remembered for, do as I say. And somehow we have betrayed the responsibility. However, I don't want to talk about failures of fathers this morning. I want to talk about portraits of godly fathers. Portraits of godly fathers as found in our text as outlined for you in your bulletin. There are three texts this morning, but please be aware of the fact that that does not mean that my message will be three times longer. It's just that they cover the topic that is at hand for this morning. Turn, if you please, to Psalm 103. Psalm 103. And we want to look at the first of these portraits. Portraits of godly fathers. In Psalm 103, we read these words, like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. Like as a father. The first thing I gleaned from this text was this, a father's godlike attribute. A father's godlike attribute. Now, I am quite sure, dear friends, that like Pastor Hamilton said, there are some of us who do not have lovely memories about our fathers. But I want to remind you that we are not called upon so much to reflect upon what fathers did to us that were negative, inasmuch as some of those things were done. In the economy of heaven, we are called upon to actually anticipate what we can do to make sure that the mistakes are not repeated. Larry Crabb said in his book, Inside Out, that in this fallen world, we are both victims as well as agents. We are victims as well as agents. And we can't do anything about what has happened to us in the past, but we can do everything to change our future. I shall never forget the first time my daughter asked me to help her with her homework. For some of you, that might mean absolutely nothing, but for me, it was a glorious, glorious red-letter day because I never had a father to help me with my homework. I never had a father who would be able to come to me and put his arms around me and say, are you having problems with this? It might be true that I don't understand some of the new math, But it is a whole lot better to say to my daughter, I don't understand it, than to say to her, I don't have time for it. Psalm 103 gives us then this godlike attribute in fathers. And I want you to consider with me the beauty of a godlike father, because there are such. Inasmuch as we find perhaps more writings about them than we would find more actual displaying of them, it is true that there are fathers who qualify for this attribute we call compassion. Look at, first of all, what I consider from this text, the depth of relationship. A godlike attribute of a father is the ability to experience and to display depth relationship. Of course, that has become a very common thing these days. We talk about quality time we spend with our children, quality time we spend with our wives. Well, I don't want to talk about quality time. I want to talk about depth. Because you see, friends, depth is what happens inside of me and is felt by those who experience it outside of me. Depth relationship, as a father pitieth. We live in a world where we don't want pity from anybody. I've heard it again and again. But that word pity, my friends, describes something of the uniqueness of what is true of a father. And what thrills me with this verse is that God didn't say, as a mother. Not that mothers do not have compassion for their children, but as a father. God wants to display to the world through fathers what depth relationship is, and he does this by saying that there is a quality in a father that is true of God. Depth relationship. The word pity in the Hebrew is a word which speaks of an inward feeling of deep affection. It is love in its deepest and widest sense felt by an individual. It is what is inside of the individual. It is what is true in the interior of a father. In fact, the New Testament word for this word is belly, or the bowel. Compassion is something that is felt in the bowel, in the interior of an individual. And God said, for a father, there is this depth feeling of love. Listen, friends, that expresses itself in action. In other words, a father is one who not only feels for his children, a father is one who touches his children. One of the nuances of this word is to fondle, to touch. And we have been sold a bag of goods in our time because it isn't proper anymore to touch, because you're under suspicion if you touch another person. And as a result of that, my friends, we're growing up in a world that is suspicious of one another. But here in our text, the depth relationship that we see in a father for his children is that feeling of deep, deep affection. It moves from the inside, and it has an object, the children of the father. A father embraces his children. A father touches his children. A father puts his arm around them. And dear friends, may I tell you, that is not easy. Allow me to, I do not want to present myself to you as anything, but I was brought up in a very strict British influence background. And we do not know how to touch in that system. We know how to rule. We know how to give orders. But we don't know how to embrace. We don't know how to express our feelings. We don't know how to say to someone, I feel deeply for you. I am so thankful that you're a part of my life. We rule by fiat. We rule by a certain kind of heavy-handedness, so that the only thing that people know about us is that we have fatherly authority. But they don't know what we have inside. Our children have never seen us cried. They have never seen us expressing any kind of affection. Several years ago, when we lived down in the city, in Don Mills. Whenever I say city, people think I'm talking about Girard and somewhere down there. Anything north of south of Steele to me is a city now. I don't know why. But I came home one day and I heard crying in my basement. And I went down quickly to see what was happening. My wife and my daughter were watching Little House on the Prairie. And they were weeping. And I could not, in fact, I would not, in fact, I haven't understood it. I'm not used to that, my friends. Tears are for things that's private, that's meaningful. Tears are for things that are essential in life. That's what I thought. One of the most moving times in my own life was when the Lord called Dave home last year. And I broke down in this pulpit while the choir was practicing to sing. And my daughter came to me and put her arms around me and said, "Daddy, I am not crying because the Lord has called Dave home. I'm crying because I've never seen you cry before." As a father, pitieth, expressing feelings in action. If you please, there's a great book written by Gordon and Gail MacDonald titled "If Those Who Reach Could Touch," and I always think of that, and I cut this out to share it with you. Morris Hart was a playwright, and he recalled a childhood Christmas when his father took him shopping, hoping to buy the boy the present he would like. The two walked down the streets of New York, inspecting the merchandise displayed in the different showrooms, displayed on scores of pushcarts and showrooms. Hearts, that is, the little boy's eyes, were drawn to a chemistry set and a toy printing press. But a father, very poor, had less expensive things in mind. Each time they would find something the boy wanted, the father would ask the vendor's price, shake his head, and move on. Occasionally, he would pick up a smaller, less expensive toy and try to attract his son's attention. But there was no meeting of the minds. Eventually, they came to the end of the line of the pushcarts without a purchase. And later on, Morris Hart is writing, "I heard my father jingle some coins in his pocket. In a flash, I knew it all. He'd gotten together about 75 cents to buy me a Christmas present. And he hadn't dared say so in the case there was nothing to be had for such small a sum of money. As I looked up at him, I saw despair and disappointment in his eyes. That brought me closer to him than I had ever been in my life. I wanted to throw my arms around him and say, 'It doesn't matter, I understand. This is better than the printing press,' that is, to hold Dad and for Dad to hold him. I wanted to say, 'I love you.' But instead, we stood shivering beside each other for a moment. Then we turned away from the last two pushcarts and started silently back home. I didn't even take his hand on the way home," Morse writes, "nor did he take mine. We were not on that basis. Nor did I ever tell him how close I felt to him that night. That for a little while, the concrete wall between father and son had crumbled away. And I knew that we were two lonely people struggling to reach each other." A father, in his beauty of expression, shows his God-likeness by depth relationship. But then, I want you to see the dignity of that relationship. Not only the depth of it, but the dignity of it. Dignity of it. "Like as a father pitieth his children, so
two little letters, one word. And what God is saying, my friends, like as a father who shows depth relationship, who shows beauty in the relationship, so God. So God. In other words, God intended a father to say to his son, a father to say to his daughter, a father to say to his household, if you want to know about God, get to know me as I get to know you. If you want to see what God is like, get to know me. Look at my actions. Look at my attitude. Listen to my words. Because as I am in this attribute which God has lent to me, so it is infinitely more in God. Infinitely more in God. Whatever love there is in me, I have received it from God and I display it for Him. Whatever sense of pity, compassion there is in me, so it is with God. So that when on earth you fail miserably, you can depend upon compassionate love that will rescue you. And even if you must go from that love, you may be sure, like the prodigal son, you can come home again, because the Father in the prodigal son is none other than our Heavenly Father. So, my friends, I ask myself the question, am I that way to my daughter? Am I that way to my son? Am I that way to my household? In Genesis 18, God said of Abraham, I know Abraham, that he will order his household so that they can grow up knowing the command of God. God wanted the household of Abraham to know him, and he gave the responsibility to Abraham. As a father, so the Lord. But I want you to see the beneficiaries of a godlike father. Not only the beauty, but the beneficiaries of a godlike father. The first, and it's implied in the text, the first person to benefit from a father's compassion, a father's depth relationship, is the father's companion or his wife. This is seen, I think, in 1 Samuel. If you want to go back there for a moment. 1 Samuel, chapter 1, verses 4 to 8. And the story of 1 Samuel is the story of feelings of compassion between a husband and a wife. We're told, my friends, in verse 4, now when the day had come, Elkanah sacrificed, he was responsible for being in the temple. He would give portions to Penaiah, his wife, and to all her sons and her daughters, but to Hannah, he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had closed her womb. She was mocked because of this, verse 6. Verse 7, they are to go up again to sacrifice. And Hannah is weeping. And listen, if you please, my friends, to the tenderness of a father, a husband to his wife. Verse 8, then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? What is the matter? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Listen to it now. Am I not a benefit to you? You have the word better there. That's exactly what the word means. Am I not a benefit to you? Am I not a benefit to you more than 10 sons? It would be so wonderful to have them. But a day will come when they will grow up and they will go, and it will be you and me. And when you and I are left alone, then Hannah, we must begin to be a benefit to each other now.
not later.
The beneficiary, the father's companion, his wife. Time will not permit me to go into that. The father's children. Like as a father pitieth his children. Ah, my friends. The interpretation of the text is a father who is seen in the position of the leadership of his home, who will display a godlike attribute in the dealing with his offsprings, sharing with them in such a way that they never become exasperated or angry at what he does. And perhaps the best illustration of this, fortunately or unfortunately, is in the life of David. When David was about to die, he called Solomon, his son, 1 Chronicles chapter 28. And he shared with him, and he said to Samuel, Samuel, I want you to follow the God of your father. Samuel, I followed God. I failed, and you know my failures. But I have succeeded in other areas. And if you can remember my failures with disappointment rather than with anger, I will be satisfied. I don't want you to remember my failures with anger. I want you to remember them with disappointment. Disappointing love, if you please. But I want you to follow God with all your heart as your father. Ah, dear friends, are we as fathers confident that we can look into the eyes of our children and say, follow me as I follow God? Quickly, my second thought is in the New Testament. And it's in the text that was read to us this morning by Jenny. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, and also Colossians 3 and 21. A father's godlike attitude. Not only the attribute, but the attitude. And in this attitude of the father, we're told in Ephesians 6 and Colossians 3, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. A unique word, my friends, and even though in English we have the two words, the same word expressing what we think are the same thoughts, but they're not. In the first, a father, according to these texts, disciplines with caution, or he takes precautionary measures when he disciplines. That's what the word nurture means. And the first of these precautions he takes is he avoids aggravating his children. A father avoids, in his godlike attitude, he avoids aggravating his children. Now, it is interesting. The word that is used for provoke here is the word from which we get our word peroxide. That which embitters. And the father is being told, in your attitude, be careful that you do not cause bitterness. Have the kind of an attitude by which you're able to relate that produces the purpose for which you discipline your children. Now, it is interesting that what this word literally means, fathers, do not provoke, the word is, fathers, be sure that you give room between you and your child or children. Don't expect of them a maturity that's true only of a mature person in age and in time. What this father does is that he keeps up the tremendous pressure by means of what he is saying. Reminds me reading of Dr. Henry Brandt several years ago. Christian psychiatrist, one of the earliest ones of that tribe. And Dr. Henry Brandt told the story of a father who was going out one morning and told his son to make sure he moved his bicycle from the driveway after he had gone to work.
And when he came home that afternoon, well, I'm glad that in those days they are the same as they are these days. The bicycle was still there.
And the father went into a rage. And Dr. Brandt says, isn't it interesting that he spent his entire day waiting to get home to see if when he got home that bicycle would be removed? Fathers, do not provoke your children.
Oh, friends, look at the prodigal son and the father. Father, give me what's coming to me.
And in a unique sense, that father released that son. He didn't nag him. He didn't use words to try to get to him.
That's the first implication of that word as found in Ephesians 6. The second word in Colossians chapter 3:21 is, fathers, do not provoke. And this word does not speak about distance. That is, to understand that there's a distance between you. In fact, the word speaks of one who is superior to an inferior. The father is supposed to be mature, is supposed to be godlike in his attitude. The son, the daughter, they are coming up in that and they are looking to see the model that they want to choose. But in this word in Colossians 3, it is not talking about understanding the distance. In this word, it is a father who rides an issue. Who rides an issue. Who constantly pound in. You know, one of the things I avoid with my daughter, and with my son, I hope, and with the church, by the way, there are times to say, but friends, we must become creative as fathers not to use the terms, when I was your age. We might say it, but ask God for creativity. Ask God for the ability to say it in such a way that they hear it. Because, my friends, the moment you say, when I'm going to tell you, the doors are shut. The doors are shut. And we must ask God for wisdom, insight, to know how to actually discipline. In fact, let me quickly go to the second part of this text. A father who is godlike in attitude doesn't simply avoid aggravating. He avoids harassing. And as a result, my friends, he disciplines with a purpose. Fathers, do not provoke your children, but nurture them or bring them up. The term bring them up, my friends, speaks of one who has a certain direction that is desired. It is to discipline by means of educating. It is to discipline by means of modeling. It is to discipline by means of instructing. It is to discipline by means of chastening. But all through it, it is with a purpose. It is to bring that individual into the way of moral excellence, of social and emotional stability. It is to bring that person to the place where choices are made as a result of what is happening to the inside of the individual. So the father who displays a godlike attitude doesn't deal with his sons or daughters from the standpoint of what they do. He corrects what they do by seeking to shape what they are. That's what a father does. And that, my friend, is what God has in mind for you and for me. The whole purpose of what God does in chastening and disciplining us is that one day he might make us all like the Lord Jesus. And the father here is called upon to nurture, to educate, to bring in a direction that will produce godliness, that will perpetuate righteousness, that will give joy to the life of the offspring. Friends, I close. Many, many children, in fact, it was quite interesting. The first school that I attended was a very, very strict school, very, very strict. I was sharing with Laurel the other day how strict the first school was, and I benefited from it. Recently, I received a paper from the school, and the president, who is the outgoing president right now, wrote a letter of apology to every student that had been hurt through some of the rigidness of that school. And many were.
but an open letter of apology by the president of this great institute. My friends, it might be that there are some fathers in here this morning who needs to make an apology. Perhaps not publicly, but perhaps by a phone call today. An apology for the rigidity, the nagging, the harassing. Because if you want your sons and your daughters, my friends, to we want them to perpetuate righteousness, to be well-rounded socially and emotionally and psychologically, then we will have to display this God-like attribute, and we will have to display this God-like attitude.